And tonight, Dr. Brooke Agnew joins us. Dr. Brooks, of course, has talked with us before about the hollow earth theory. And we're going to talk with him about that and so much more next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Brooks Agnew back with us. Dr. Agnew, of course, grew up in California around JPL and Caltech, received his bachelor's in chemistry from the Tennessee Technological University. He had honors there. Favorite hobby, of course, is being the host of the X Squared Radio, exploring mysteries of the universe. Multi-patented engineer, CEO of an automobile manufacturing company in Charlotte, North Carolina, producing the nation's first affordable electric pickup truck. Brooks, I wanted to talk with you about the truck. How's that coming?
Well, it's coming along okay. As you know, gas prices have dropped.
Yes.
So the fever for electric vehicles has slacked a little bit. But we're in a different space, you know. We're going toward the commercial fleet business instead of the commuter business, and it still makes economic sense. Besides, it's smart. You don't shovel your planet into your gas tank and burn it.
Exactly. You've been working on this for a long time now.
It takes about 5 years to do a vehicle launch, and we started down this path in 2008. By 2013, we were pretty much ready with that platform, but we had supply chain problems. We were importing a frame, so we decided not to import the frame. We designed our own frame right here in Race City in North Carolina, and it was much more successful. Our customers really liked it a lot more. So now we're about a year and a half away from people being able to drive them on the American highway.
Super. Now, what are you working on research-wise these days?
Well, it's more about high-efficiency drives, lightweighting technologies. A lot of this has to do with high-strength steel, different carbon fiber laminations, things like that to make vehicles lightweight and very, very strong. Of course, you know, a heavy vehicle doesn't make a very good electric vehicle, so it has to be lightweight, and it has to be strong and safe. So right now we make the safest pickup truck cab in the world.
Excellent. Brooks, let's talk now about planet Earth. They're beginning to tell us that Earth collided with another huge object a long time ago. I think you believe that.
Well, in our original series, The Arc of Millions of Years, my co-author, E.J. Clarke, approached me and said, I want to do a book on the creation of the Earth. Well, you know, we physicists are kind of fascinated by creation of the Earth stories. But she wanted me to approach the physics side of it while she did the archaeology and ancient history side of it. And the two merged together so well that it ended up telling a 2,000-page story over four volumes, and they sold really, really well. I had no idea people were interested in this kind of stuff, George. But it turns out what the ancients were trying to tell us is that Earth is actually made up of two planets, one 6,000 years old and the other 4.5 billion years old. And these two Earths are of different energy states. One is a very high energy state, one a low energy state. In the scriptures, they're called a spirit Earth and a temporal Earth. And you asked me one time how two planets could occupy the same space at the same time. And the example I gave you was a 5-gallon bucket full of glass marbles. You think it's full, and then you can take a couple more gallons of water and fill up that bucket. So now you have two, phases of matter occupying the same space at the same time. There's a lot of space inside planet Earth. And when the two planets merged, it was a terrible cataclysm for both planets, a terrible flood that took about 7 months to settle down, where the races of both planets could basically come out of hiding and start blending together. And that's what we have today.
And the moon got spit out from that too?
The moon actually was here long before the Earth was.
Oh, really?
Yes. Most astrophysicists have looked at two different theories. One's called Earth capture, and the other is called moon capture. And what they have decided is that the moon was here first, and then Earth came in and joined it in this rather strange orbit that it has. The moon very uniquely revolves on its axis exactly at the same rate that it goes around Earth. So we see the same side of the moon all the time. Other moons in the solar system revolve on their axis much faster, but not this one.
Interesting take. So let's get into some of these possible discoveries of the hollow Earth theory. And with that theory, Brooks, Are we saying that there's anything living within?
Well, that's two really good questions. The first is, you know, how do planets form? Do they form as, you know, solid balls, or do they form as molten balls in space and then the outside just kind of cools and, you know, sooner or later beings live on the outside crust? That is not really how we see planets forming. Our theory right now is that planets form from accretion disks, which are large gas clouds, and they basically coalesce into a smaller and smaller space, and as they do, of course, they spin faster and faster and faster. Some of those become, you know, ultra compressed and very hot, and they explode and become something like an asteroid belt. Others become lopsided, like Venus did, and spits off a piece of itself, like Mercury was once a moon of Venus, and now it's its own planet. But then there's kind of a Goldilocks range, the perfect combination, where the planet simply expands and cools, and of course, as it does, it slows down. And this is what we believe planets like Earth form like. Of course, when they do this, they leave a void on the inside because it's the same amount of matter. It's just occupying a larger and larger diameter. Sometimes it leaves a solid core behind, usually a very hard metal like an iron crystal. And other times it leaves nothing behind, just a wide open hole. And what we see in space are two different kinds of planets. Some have very strong magnetospheres and some have no magnetosphere. That is the difference between the rotational speed of the core and the crust. It's kind of like a generator making that magnetic field. Mars has no magnetosphere. Earth has a magnetosphere. The difference is that with a magnetosphere, life can exist on the surface because electromagnetic radiation that comes from the sun that would sterilize the surface otherwise is routed around the Earth by the magnetic fields. Now, as a biologist, I can tell you, even in the most inhospitable places on Earth, if there is space there, there will be life there.
But how big is the life?
That's a good question. It could be microbial. It could be more complex. It could be intelligent. Now, one thing we do know is that when the polar caps go through a really horrendous cataclysm like they did in 2007 when the Arctic ice calved off a piece of itself about half the size of Pennsylvania, is it opened up a Northwest Passage, which had really never been open before, open sea before. And what we started to see in our nets were all kinds of fish that are supposed to be extinct like 15 million years ago. They started showing up alive in our nets. So it added an oceanographic piece of evidence that there might be a vent in the crust between two oceans, one inside the planet, blending with the one that's on the surface of our planet. Because one of the unique things about these fish that were showing up is they're blind. They can't see. They don't have a need for eyes.
They don't have a need for eyes because, of course, the environment gives them that. But God knows what could be down there.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, he does know. He's the only one who probably does.
Well, this planet is so full of life and species we haven't even discovered yet. The other pieces of evidence, like, for instance, a study that was done by Washington University by a Dr. Y. Sessions and his graduate students, they examined 600,000 seismograms. These are printouts that the U.S. Geological Survey does each time there's a large earthquake on Earth. They kind of do a CAT scan of the Earth. And what they found when they analyzed these seismograms is the damping waves of another ocean underneath the Atlantic Ocean. So if there's an ocean under there, I guarantee you there's going to be life in that ocean. If there's a vent between the surface and that ocean through the crust, there's a possibility that life is blending at that point.
It's kind of like Journey to the Center of the Earth, isn't it?
Well, it's amazing how science fiction does that, isn't it? How you know, visionaries like Jules Verne said, well, we'll go to the moon or we'll go 20,000 leagues under the sea. And now we're doing it.
There was an old movie that Lee Marvin was in, black and white, about he somehow wandered into a cavern in the inner earth and people were living there. They were all blind. They couldn't see. No one could. And it was a weird movie. I can't remember the name of it, Brooks, but it just talked about an underground civilization living down there.
Well, I'm amazed at some of the science fiction that's done. I remember the original one with, what was it, York was in it, and it was Arne Saknussemm, and they somehow wandered into the inner earth.
Yep.
That was quite a film when I was a little boy watching that.
Now, your new book, of course, where you talk about two Earths, one race for time. Tell me about that.
Well, this is a really interesting story.
And pronounce the name of this new book.
It's called Birth, you know, just like...
Birth, but you spell it.
Yeah, it's B-E-A-R-T-H.
Okay.
And it's a play on words. It means that Earth is about to go through a new birth. It's the assumption or the theory that Earth is made up of these two different forms of energy is a little bit similar to the human body. You know, we are not this bag of water and calcium and iron. We're this animated being inside this body. We're the ones that make it move and make it think and make it, you know, have desire and choose its shape and color and all that kind of stuff. We're the ones that make that happen. But someday we're going to leave this body. The body's going to stay behind and the spirit's going to go on. Well, the theory is from the 2,000 pages that we did in the Ark of Millions of Years is that one day the Earth is going to do that as well. And so, in fact, I was on your program and a producer called me and said, you know, I'm fascinated by this concept. Have you ever thought about doing a screenplay?
Huh?
I said, well, no, but I'll look into it. So I bought the software and I went to a few classes and learned how to use it, and I wrote the screenplay in 2011, and then we entered a few contests, and there was some interest, but you know how hard it is to pitch a movie. I mean,
oh, sure.
Man, you go up and down Hollywood, there's somebody every half block pitching a screenplay. So I kind of sat there for 2 or 3 years, and I said, well, I don't want to let the story just lay there, so I decided to convert the screenplay
into a book,
into a series of three books. So this is the first of the three, and it is a white-knuckle ride.
You did the total opposite. So I want you to paint a picture for us on this collision with Earth and this other object. When did this happen in the solar system's formation? And kind of like tell us what's happening.
Well, it happened long after the solar system's formation. But the story goes that during the flood of Noah, there were really two creations that had reached... let's call a semi-ultimate development. One was the generations of Adam to Noah, and the other was the other creation inside the book of Genesis, where, you know, God creates man and woman and commands them to multiply and replenish the earth and till the earth. And it's just pretty much benign story. There's no Adam, there's no Eve, there's no Garden of Eden. That's later. So the idea is that there are actually two races of Adam, lower Adam and higher Adam. And somewhere the story gets corrupted because outsiders, these watchers, these Nephilim, come in. And at first, their job is to kind of watch over mankind and make sure that they develop properly. But it gets corrupted because Lucifer steps in and says, you know, we could take over this whole creation for ourselves if you'll just do what I ask you to do. And evidently the Watchers did that, and they ended up corrupting the seed of man. And it gets to the point in the Bible and in several other traditions around the world that God realized that his whole genetic creation is about to be corrupted and lost unless he cleans the slate. And so he has this universal flood. That flood is the merging of the two Earths, one planet very, you know, high in water and the other one not so high in water. When the two planets came together, it was devastating. one, the higher race of Adam living on the ark, and the other, people, you know, scrambling for every cave and high mountain they can find. But the two races do survive, and they come together again, and modern man is the result of those two races blending and the conflicts that go with it.
Okay, so you mesh biblical stories with real science.
Yeah, and it's not just biblical, because as you know, when we did the Ark of Millions of Years, we went into every world tradition. We went into Tibetan, we went into Yucatan, we took 40 ancient works from the Sefer Yetzirah all the way to the Popol Vuh. All of these traditions talked about this flood and the blending of two races.
Okay, so when this collision occurs, it's got to be the loudest thing we've ever heard.
Absolutely, and it happens. We're watching it right now. In fact, LIGO, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatories, we have two of them in this country, one in Hanford, Washington, the other in Livingston in Louisiana, and I've been to both of them. I've sat in the control rooms of both facilities. They've been looking for black holes for ever since they built those facilities, and they've had to get better and better at controlling frequencies and vibration and manufacturing sapphire-coated mirrors and everything. But finally, they got good enough. Just recently, like while I was writing this book, they discovered two black holes coalescing. All kinds of bodies in space, planets, stars, neutron stars, binary stars, and black holes come together just like this Earth did.
Okay, now let's lead us into what this all means to us today.
Well, what it means to us today is that every single one of these civilizations had in their legends not only the fact that they merged together, but that one day, this day, right now, the 21st century, they would come apart. And that's what this book is about.
Now, what do you mean come apart? Physically?
Yes, physically, the higher vibrational Earth would become dissident with the lower vibrational Earth. The spirit Earth would become dissident with the temporal Earth, and they would separate, just like when a human body, the human spirit, separates from the human body. Earth is about ready to either go through birth or go through death. And you can call it the rapture, you can call it tribulation, you can call it what I just called it, but... Now we're seeing this occur, and the two races, the ones that will align themselves with the higher vibration or spiritual Earth, will become unaware of the darker and more temporal, more, let's just call it more murderous, temporal spirits, and they will remain with their respective Earths.
But you're not predicting that planet Earth is going to split. Physically, are you?
Not split down the middle. It's more like phase apart. Two whole planets will go separate ways in space. One higher vibrational, one lower vibrational.
Literally, though.
Yes.
Wow.
And you,
I mean, what does that do to all of us on this planet?
Well, all of us, obviously, are going to be divided. We are going to choose which Earth to go with. And you can imagine what kind of a big screen movie this would make. We've seen movies about, you know, a planet getting ready to collide with Earth, but we've never seen a movie about Earth actually
breaking
separating.
Apart.
Yeah, one race actually being taken up with another planet.
I mean, let's look at the planet right now. If this occurred, kind of tell us who, what part would go where.
Well, that's the ultimate question, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about Judgment Day. We're talking about, you know, choose whom you will serve kind of thing. And what do we see on our planet? We see races of people whose propensity is to murder and rape and destroy and not create anything. And then we have others who are loving and tolerant and merciful and benevolent and wouldn't hurt a fly.
Well, we couldn't be lucky enough, though, to split it up that way, could we?
Well, maybe it's not luck. Maybe it's all by design.
We'll find out when we come back. With our special guest tonight, Dr. Brooks Agnew. Brooks did a Beyond Belief program with me that you can watch by going into the archives at beyondbelief.com. Great program. We talked about all the things we're talking about now. We'll be back in a moment with the real Dr. Brooks Agnew next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast with Dr. Brooks Agnew. We're talking about his new work called Birth, but spelled B-E-A-R-T-H, Two Earths, One Race for Time. So, Brooks, I want to make sure I get this right. What you're saying is, you correct me if I'm wrong, that the planet Earth that collided with another object a long time ago, that they're going to split up again.
Yes.
So far, so good?
Yeah, that's correct. And it's not just another object. This was directed by the Creator himself. What he did is he had another planet Earth, much like this one, except it hadn't rained on that planet, and he sent that Earth to here. Some people say that that Earth fell, that creation fell to Earth. And those two worlds merged here in this orbit around this sun in the Milky Way galaxy. It's a known astronomical fact that the galaxy Sagittarius has already passed through the Milky Way galaxy. So this is not something that's out of reach of imagination, and certainly not out of the reach of cosmology.
Now, I'm trying to picture the planet and how this would crack off. What would the remaining planets look like? I mean, will they still be round, or are they going to look like it's chipped right off?
My theory is that they would still be round, that if you look at the density of Earth, it's not very dense at all. In fact, neutrinos could pass through about one light year of Earth without hitting anything. That's how much space there is in the matter that makes up Earth. The other Earth is resting in the spaces between all the other matter here on this planet. When it moves, when the two Earths move apart, they will move apart seamlessly. Of course, it'll be cataclysmic. Some scriptures call it the tribulation. Others call it, the actual dying of the planet, or the planet having birth, going through the travail of birth. There are all kinds of descriptions of it like this, and that is what happens in the book. Now, of course, that doesn't completely happen in the book because it's a trilogy,
yeah.
So it's going to set you up. But it is a white knuckle ride. There are chase scenes and villains, and it is a true story. But it's my first fiction work in the sense that these are all real events with fictional characters.
What's the trigger for the crack up, the separation?
Well, it is the fact that we now have 7 billion souls on the planet.
Okay.
Alive. I don't believe that the planet has ever been in that condition before.
And more coming.
Yes, and there's a symbiotic relationship, it appears, between the souls of the planet and the planet itself. We're here for a reason, and there's no shortage of evidence that in the last 150 years, we have advanced as a society more than we have in the last 150,000 years. We've been walking on sandals or riding horses up until about 150 years ago, and now we're flying between planets. So, the Earth itself and the people on it have evolved to the point to get ready for this event.
With this crack up though, you were saying that there's good and evil on this planet. Obviously, are we going to have a separation, like a prison planet goes off?
Yeah, or a prison planet remains
in
orbit while the spirit planet goes off.
I mean, how do we separate the good from the bad?
Well, that's a good question. I think we're doing that ourselves. I don't think that there's some being in the universe that's going to say, you go to heaven, you go to hell, you go to heaven, you go to hell. It's going to be our own energy state. We choose which world we go with. And what we're seeing right now, and I honestly didn't think this would happen in our lifetimes, George, really. I mean, the silent majority has been pretty silent.
Yeah.
I really didn't think that the silent majority would ever wake up. And now what it seems that we're seeing is, for the first time in well, ever, I think, the silent majority is awakening, and they're angry. They're mad about the way that our planet has been manipulated. And that's what the book is about as well. Somewhere on this planet is an intelligence that's so old and so powerful and so focused that it has kept this evil pathway straight as an arrow. Generation after generation, it has marched inexorably to the point where it is right now.
Okay, so we see all this coming, the cracking up. What will the orbits be of the planets?
Well, most planets in the universe do not orbit around a sun. They're known as rogue planets or free-floating planets. They don't orbit around stars. It is not inconceivable that the spirit Earth will simply travel through space
And just keep going.
back to where it came from. Exactly.
Leaving the rest of us on this godforsaken planet.
Well, I don't know if we'll be here. I don't plan on being here. I plan on, keeping myself as straight and narrow as I can and trying to align myself with the merciful and charitable and benevolent.
So you're going to go on the other planet?
It would be regretful, but yes, that's my plan. And if I stay here, with the temporal Earth, and then those are the choices that I've made, then that's, I have to accept that as well.
How did you come up with this theory?
Well, it's kind of coalesced, raised in a strict Christian household, and then sort of rejecting that in my teen years. Not that I went rogue or anything. I didn't become a bad kid, but I just realized that what was being taught to me, the dogma that was being taught to me, wasn't the whole story. There were lots of pieces missing, and so I went exploring on my own. And I really didn't find the answer. I really didn't become an Earth explorer until I was, oh gosh, in my early 50s. And then I just took off around the world. I visited country after country, and I investigated traditions, and I found that every single one of these ancient societies had a little bit of the information. And when I put it all together, this picture became crystal clear. And I thought, well, there's got to be a way to tell this story. And you know what I found is lots of people are telling this story in their own way, music and art, and some even in religions. And a lot of private traditions are also, treading these waters. So it's a consciousness thing. A lot of people understand what's going on. They just need a point of focus.
You wrote part of this in 2007, right?
Oh, that was real strange. I
Yet you
kind of,
predicted things in 2015.
I kind of put myself in a meditative state as though I was in the year 2015, and I wrote a portion of my book, Remembering the Future, in 2007, as though I was living in 2015. And I saw, the presidency collapsing. I saw the economic collapse of the dollar, the manipulation of shorts and things like that to destroy certain markets and, profit insanely. I saw weather calamities, and I thought, well, that's really strange. But I'll write it down anyway because it was interesting. And lo and behold, 2015 showed up, and we're seeing those very same things. The presidency, not just the president, but the presidency itself, the executive branch of America, has become shaken. We honestly don't know if it's going to survive in the same shape that the founding fathers set it up.
Did this information come to you as a revelation?
That's a really deep question, George. I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I'm not a prophet, I'm not a seer, but I believe that all of us have the ability to transport our consciousness through time and pick up information that's just for us. Now, some people feel compelled to prophesy to other people. I'm not one of those people. But I wrote my thoughts down, and I think it's just remarkable that many of those thoughts came to pass just the way they did.
Did you hear a little voice whispering these to you?
Lots of them. I have to, I guess, choose between which ones you're going to listen to and which ones you don't.
Right, exactly.
We all do that.
Okay, so you've talked about a great war at the end of all this, much like Armageddon, the apocalypse.
You know, we have been taught that story, and we kind of get confused as to which war happens when. You know, the Gog and Magog, and you know, Jesus coming down and splitting the Mount of Olives and laying waste to all the evil and reigning on the earth for 1,000 years. And the timing of those things, we get all mixed up, and we hear different stories, and Lord knows we see plenty of movies about it. But what we're really seeing, honestly, over time, it's not really a war. It's just continuous battle. You know, we thought World War I was going to be the war to end all wars, but it wasn't.
It
It took
wasn't.
a pause, and then it resumed again. Same players, different weapons, and we did it again. And then that war ended, and you know, we had the greatest generation, and then we did Korea, we did Vietnam, we did, and on and on and on. And today, we're not even at war. We're fighting terror. It's like fighting ghosts. It's like fighting bad breath. It's just going to go on and on and on forever and ever. And the more money they spend on weapons, and the United States spends more than the eight next nations combined, six of those are our allies. Figure it out. What are we doing? We're spending most of our money on weapons to kill each other. It makes no sense whatsoever, unless one or more of the Nephilim is still here on this planet, working behind the scenes
Directing things.
to keep us fighting.
Yeah, that's that possibility too.
And we never declare war. We just declare battle. Let's go battle.
For someone to believe this or understand it, do they have to be very spiritual?
Well, if they're not when they begin the book, they will be when they finish it. It is a white knuckle ride. It's a big screen movie. I mean, this is a movie you will cry, you will laugh, you will dig your fingernails into the cover of this book as you try to hold on to your seat. But when you finish it, you're going to be different.
Will we like the author when it's all over?
Well, I think you'll probably like the author. I think I'm a likable person.
So necessarily a happy ending here?
It has a happy ending, yes. There's, you know, the normal four plots that you find in any movie: girl gets boy, girl loses boy, kind of thing. There's that in it too, and there's no really bad language in it. It is maybe rated T for teen, so.
All right, so the spiritual aspect of this, though, seems to take more forefront than science. Am I correct there?
I think they're balanced. What I try to do in any of the publications that I've put out, because I've never written a fiction work before, they're all nonfiction and there are a lot of science in all of them. I try to balance the two. It's not all fantasy. Of course, when you have characters, there's a lot of dialogue, and some of the science and some of the technology comes out in the dialogue. But you're going to learn things about the planet and about the way planets form and about the way planets come apart.
The cracking up of the planet, is it more spiritual or science then? The physical happening of it.
I think it's a combination of both. And I'm not saying that to be political. You know, science and spirituality were once the same thing. It wasn't until churches became formed and they kind of took over the authority of science that people started getting, you know, beheaded and burned to the stake and hung and drowned and all that stuff. And then governments came to power and said, all right, we're going to separate church from state. No more talking about science and spirituality at the same time. Well, this book brings it full circle. Spirituality and science are the same thing.
Interesting take, Brooks, on all of this. This has got to be one of your strangest projects.
Well, it is. You know, when you sit down and you write, and if you're a writer, you do this every day. Sometimes you're writing in a journal, sometimes you're preparing, you know, notes for your weekly radio program, but you're writing all the time. And it's who are you writing to? I mean, you're writing to yourself, you're writing to God, and sometimes you get answers back and you have epiphanies and I mean, you know this. You've been at the helm of probably one of the most spiritually enlightening radio programs in the history of the world, and you've reached more people than anyone could imagine with this program. It's a tremendous responsibility, and I'm sure you feel it each time you sit down behind that microphone. It does change you. It does work with you. It enlightens you, and it imbues you with a responsibility that you take very seriously.
What are the signs of this physical crack-up of the planets?
Well, of course, there are going to be volcanoes and earthquakes and meteor showers. Once the sixth seal is opened, then all of these signs and wonders occur in the heaven and on the earth. I mean, we just had a 5.1 quake in Oklahoma, for crying out loud. That's not typically a tectonically active area of the country. But the New Madrid Fault is predicted to be the next major quake in the United States. If that occurs, and the last time it really thumped hard, the Mississippi River ran backwards and it formed Real Foot Lake. If that happened today, it would be completely devastating to the economy of the United States.
I've always wondered if the planet could crack. Always. Now, what about our politicos? Do they sense any of this?
You know, this is the most interesting thing. When I started doing research for the book, I take real events like the Deepwater Horizon oil spill.
Yeah.
I started doing research into that, and I found that the owners of Deepwater Horizon, and these are the likes of Goldman Sachs and some of the CEOs and executives that had large amounts of stock in this most incredible floating oil fortress, they moved their money and they made key investments. I'm talking massive investments worth billions of dollars weeks before that happened. They knew it was going to happen. It was a tragedy for sure, but was it an accident? Or maybe it was an accident that they knew was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start researching other things, you start seeing that banks and governments and states are moving money, building shelters under the ground and in mountains. They know something is about to happen. There's a lot of money being invested in it, not just billions, maybe trillions of dollars being invested in it. Of course they know something is happening.
What are they doing to protect themselves?
Well, one of the facilities, two of the facilities that I talk about, one is NORAD and the other one is a facility in our neck of the woods called Site R, which is a mountain on the border of Pennsylvania and Virginia, or Maryland. And these are massive underground cities that can sustain thousands of people for years. The one in the northeast here is under about 650 feet of blue-green granite, and the one in Colorado is under 2,000 feet of granite. Now, they were originally formed to be Cold War fortresses, but they're not being built for that now. They're not really worried about nuclear war. That would be devastating for everybody. This is something else. And Russia, in the last 7 years, has built over 5,000 of these shelters.
They're getting ready for something.
Every country is. China is. India is.
The Vatican, are they aware of this?
Yes, they are.
All right, Brooks, we'll talk more. We'll take calls as well next on Coast to Coast AM.